is like handing you the chemical formula for sucrose to explain why sugar is sweet. Second, qualia aren't free-floating and temporary. Some qualities, like the wetness of water and the hardness of a brick wall, are set in place. They form structures that are just as real as the formula for sucrose. The big advantage is that sweetness is an actual experience, whereas the formula for sucrose is only the map of an experience, and you can't get from the map to real life. The conscious universe embraces change, non-change, and the state of potential change. This is another reason, and one of the most important, why the cosmos feels completely humanized once you open up to the possibility. We saw that there are perceptions that we can change, those we cannot change, and others that we may or may not be able to change. These perceptions are the world created by the building blocks of qualia. The fact that a human body will be crushed by a moving bus belongs to the setup that isn't changeable. It says nothing about how the setup was created in the first place. If we knew how the setup was created, and is still being created, we'd unlock the secret of how reality evolves. Our cave-dwelling ancestors had already evolved the higher brains, the cerebral cortex, that are barely different from the cerebral cortex of Einstein or Mozart. Yet in hunter-gatherer society, there was no need for an Einstein and a Mozart. No survival purpose would have been fulfilled by them. Instead, for reasons that remain a mystery, the cosmic mind fashioned a brain machinery capable of infinite adaptation. While early Homo sapiens was preoccupied by the technology of making flint arrowheads and stitching hides together with animal sinew, the higher brain was already outfitted for the future, for Mozart sonatas and quantum mechanics. So who knows what our own brains are already outfitted for that will come into play 1,000 or 10,000 years in the future? It's quite miraculous that evolution is able to see beyond the next horizon in this way. For there is no doubt that other higher primates, like the chimpanzee, also created primitive tools, and yet they hit an evolutionary wall somewhere along the line. A chimp's ability to go beyond its present abilities is severely limited. Ours isn't. Human history is filled with untold horrors of war and violence, and yet our brains are also set up for Buddhist meditation, Quaker pacifism, and mystical ecstasy. In short, the human universe depends on seeing beyond our current abilities, where we feel trapped by the physical world and hemmed in by its rules. Cosmic mind isn't done with us. A powerful evolutionary force has propelled the human cortex to unparalleled heights at unbelievable speed. The rise of the higher brain took less than 30,000 to 40,000 years, a blip on the screen of evolutionary time. To discover where the evolutionary tidal wave is headed, we need only explore one of the most amazing human traits, shared so far, as we know, by no other living creature. We are aware of being aware. The next horizon, it turns out, is inside us. And if we want to take the next leap forward in our evolution, the only map is the one we create for ourselves, in our own consciousness. Where you really came from. Being connected to the cosmic mind is built into your nervous system. You were born to see light and hear sounds. Those abilities can also be traced to your nervous system. Specific areas will light up when music vibrates your eardrum and fireworks glow in your retina. But the cosmic mind has no specific location in the brain. How do we know that the cosmic connection is real, or that it is doing anything for us? A skeptic might point out that the lives of countless millions of people contain misery, poverty, and violence. Even the most fortunate lifetime will be visited with accidents and disasters along the way. The skeptic will ask, "Of what earthly use is your so-called cosmic connection if it can't relieve the difficulties of everyday existence?" For our answer, we have to look deeper into the setup of mind, both individual and cosmic. We mentioned that some things can be changed while others cannot. And in a third category belong things that may or may not be changeable. In fatalistic societies, such as medieval Christian Europe, God was thought to be so powerful that the individual had little room to improve his lot in life. The present era, by contrast, is filled with aspirations. People seek not just self-improvement, but total transformation, which is why the notion of a conscious universe is taking hold right now and with such force. Such a universe is constructed to promote the expansion of consciousness in the individual. On that basis alone, we can talk about change and how to achieve it. Think of the world you are familiar with, a world of family, friends, work, politics, leisure time, and so on, as a self-enclosed system. Within this system, the parts fit together and hum along, giving little hint that there's a larger reality outside the box. If you are unaware of this larger reality, the potential for change is limited by what is allowed in your world. You can't change what you aren't aware of. Therefore, the conscious universe might as well not exist, because it has no effect on your daily life. Skepticism would be a normal, natural response if someone told you that you were connected at every second of your life to cosmic mind. Now, consider the opposite extreme, an existence marked by total detachment from worldly things. Someone who has arrived at complete detachment, a yogi or Zen Buddhist monk, let's say, has no allegiance to how events work out. Good and bad, pain and pleasure, no longer generate the response of wanting more of the good and less of the bad, more of the pleasurable and less of the painful. The human nervous system is infinitely flexible, and any of us could embrace such an existence with its pure, peaceful stasis if we had a mind to. We would be free of any system, but at a cost. We would renounce most of the things ordinary people passionately pursue, because in our detachment, change is meaningless. To gain or to lose is the same. As spiritual as this may sound, to renounce the world may be just as divorced from cosmic mind as living a totally worldly life. Which leaves the third option, where some change is possible and some isn't. We can call this the evolutionary choice. Because your life is driven to seek more awareness and to enjoy the fruits of awareness through love, truth, beauty, and creativity. But at the same time, you embrace the peaceful, centered detachment that underlies all of existence. This third option, change in the midst of non-change, is the one we favor, because it makes full use of the connection with cosmic mind. On the one hand, there is immense dynamism and change. On the other, there is the reality of pure awareness, the silent source from which all of creation springs. Once you grasp what the options are, it is clear that terms like objective and subjective no longer apply. Outer life and inner life move as one. Daily activity is still individual. You are the specific person who wakes up, starts the car, and goes to work. But the consciousness that creates reality is universal. Intriguing as this sounds, we still have to prove that the connection to cosmic mind is real, workable, and an improvement over life being lived without such a connection. If you came from the realm of pure awareness, not simply from your mother's womb, understanding that can cause true transformation of the kind so many people seek and crave. My mind or cosmic mind? Abstractions are always a danger, and it may seem, even this late in the audiobook, that cosmic mind is too abstract a concept to be real or practical. Let's say you are planning a vacation and can't decide between the mountains or the seashore. After searching for hotels, you find a great deal on a hotel in Miami Beach, and that tips the balance. Now, did this whole process take place in cosmic mind? We are used to phrases like, "I've made up my mind," and "I can see it in my mind's eye." They imply that each person possesses their own mind, so it's my vacation, search for hotels, and decision to go to the beach. But this is the very illusion that makes reality, out there, separate from us. In a dualist setup, my mind is different from cosmic mind. It's much smaller, for one thing, and its viewpoint is limited to the experiences I've had since birth. Yet if we abandon the illusion of separation, there is no need to choose either or. The mind feels personal, and at the same time, it is cosmic. Imagine that you are a single electron flickering in and out of the quantum vacuum. As a single particle, you feel like me, an individual. But in reality, you are an activity of the quantum field. And in your guise as a wave instead of a particle, you exist everywhere. In our daily lives, we are accustomed to feel like individuals, while overlooking that, at another level, every person is an activity of the universe. What is true for an electron is true for structures like the human body, that are constructed from electrons, and other elementary particles. When you live in separation, ignoring your holistic self, life resembles pre-sliced bread. The urge to divide and subdivide allowed science to claim, quite falsely, that objectivity and subjectivity were entirely different, with objectivity being the superior part. But the quantum era abolished this neat division, and reality started to lead in a new direction, the very things we've covered in the preceding chapters. But can reality ever be seen directly, as a whole, with no divisions or separations? It sounds like a spiritual quest, which a prior age would call union with God, or Atman, or Satori. Reaching beyond separation was motivated by the desire to commune with spirit, and at the same time to escape earthly suffering. Now the urge is different, focused much more on higher consciousness and fulfilling one's potential. Finding a new motivation is as important, however, as trying to understand where we came from, because only certain knowledge can assure us that the cosmic mind is our source. Once we are sure of that, birth and death are seen in a very different light, under the aspect of eternity. The habit of slicing reality into neat, manageable pieces is hard to give up, largely because a holistic approach seems literally impossible. At least this is what everyday experience seems to imply. How do you look at the whole human body instead of cells, tissues, and organs? How do you look at the cosmos beyond space, time, matter, and energy? We shouldn't exaggerate the difficulties of being a whole person. If we refer to everyday life, the body isn't experienced as cells, tissues, and organs. Rather, it is experienced in different states. Being awake is a different state from dreaming and sleeping. Feeling ill is a different state from feeling well. As we've seen, quantum mechanics works in similar fashion. A wave is a different state from a particle. Likewise, mind and matter are considered so different from each other because that's our habit of thinking. But really, mind and matter are different states of the same thing, the field of consciousness. You can follow them as they morph from one to another by looking at the brain, where mental events create brain chemicals in one seamless motion. Thus, if a near collision on the highway causes you to be frightened, that mental event translates into molecules of adrenaline, which in turn translate into physical changes such as dry mouth, pounding heartbeat, and tight muscles. When you notice these changes, you are back in the realm of the mind. Likewise, all kinds of signals travel on a journey of transformation from physical to mental that has no definite endpoint. Life is transformation itself. What happens in our bodies is also happening in the universe, where any event belongs to the constant transformation of consciousness into either mind or matter. But such a statement explains nothing until we know what consciousness is. If my mind, my body, the billions of galaxies in outer space, and cosmic mind can all be reduced to states of consciousness, it behooves us to settle once and for all what consciousness actually is. Otherwise, we're just pretending that chalk and cheese are the same thing when it's obvious that they aren't. First of all, consciousness can have many states, so it doesn't appear as one thing, even though it is. If you are dreaming of a beach in Jamaica, you could be having a so-called lucid dream where all five senses are engaged. You can feel the warm sand under your feet and smell the scent of tropical flowers carried on a sea breeze. But the instant you wake up from your dream, you recognize that you are simply in a special state. Knowing what state you are in is the key to wholeness. Imagine two sports car drivers. One driver's car has five gears, and he is skillful at switching from one to the other. The second driver has five cars, each equipped with one gear. For him, driving isn't holistic and unified, because it depends on which car he chooses to drive, and each of them is confined to one gear only. The challenge is to navigate our way through a cosmos where every gear, space, time, matter, and energy, plus other physical properties such as electric charge, magnetic field, etc., is interchangeable. The whole thing could dissolve into quantum soup if there wasn't an organizer whose viewpoint took in everything. And cosmic mind serves as just such an organizer. Time, space, matter, and energy